Ani, welcome to Bom Sida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasage. The federal election is the hot topic in Bom Sida this weekend. Well, if you can call it a hot topic when there doesn't seem to be much on party platforms to address Aboriginal issues. A concerned member of Chapel Island First Nation is concerned about a fracking project in the Mi'kmaq territory, and Annie Mae Pictou-Aquash would be 66 years old now. She was a strong Mi'kmaq woman who was involved with the American Indian Movement and was murdered in the winter of 1975. Filmmaker Kathy Martin has been commissioned by Nova Scotia's Lieutenant Governor as a speaker, and Martin will be highlighting Annie Mae in her talk about strong Mi'kmaq women. All these stories plus great tunes coming your way right after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. Politicians are busy pounding the pavement, spewing out party rhetoric from their platforms looking for votes. But for Aboriginal people in the country, there doesn't seem to be much to talk about in the upcoming election. Platforms are scant on Aboriginal issues, if there's anything at all. Peter Russell is a retired political science professor from the University of Toronto. He says parties should support treaty rights and self-government.
There's a need for them to be more supportive of those Aboriginal nations, even the First Nations, let's call them Aboriginal, First Nations, who want to move ahead with agreements on self-government and on land issues.
Russell adds the Ipperwash Inquiry recommendations for a treaty commission should also be implemented in Ontario. A platform could not be found on the Conservatives' website. The NDP does not address Aboriginal issues on its party platform online, but the Liberals do include a section on Aboriginal people on its platform to include promises to implement the Kelowna Accord, remove the funding cap on Aboriginal post-secondary education, call an investigation into missing and murdered Aboriginal women, plus ratify the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. And the Greens promise to honour the Kelowna Accord and resolve land claims that do not extinguish Aboriginal title. First Nation political leaders like Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madhabi say they have a number of priorities.
I think probably health and education are right up there in terms of key issues that impact on our communities. And then, of course, the bigger ongoing issues of treaty implementation and jurisdiction always come into play.
And there's a grassroots movement online called Closing the Gap 2011, and Bob Goulet is the man behind that movement. He's hoping to raise awareness about First Nations poverty and bring political attention to the issue.
Closing the Gap is a grassroots campaign with the goal of raising the awareness of First Nations poverty in the federal election. So many parties are moving forward with the need to look at the economy, the need to look at those kind of fiscal measures, but no one is really looking at the need to rid Canada's biggest social issue, which I think is First Nations poverty.
Canadians head to the polls May 2nd. Bruce Power has delayed its plan to ship 16 steam generators to Sweden for recycling. The halt in the plans came after objections from Anishinaabeg Nation communities. The power company now says it will hold discussions with First Nations, Métis, and others seeking additional information. Duncan Hawthorne, Bruce Power president and CEO, said in a statement, "Recycling the material is the right thing to do, and the company has been licensed to do so. However, the company recognizes concerns from groups, and they want to address those concerns." Bruce Power said it will not set a date for shipping the decommissioned steam generators and will take the necessary time to meet with Aboriginal groups. The Fifth Estate, a CBC television program, has been in Thunder Bay to examine the ongoing search for 16-year-old First Nations youth Jordan Wabas. Jordan has been missing since February 7th. According to Net News Ledger, the search for the missing youth has brought together First Nation communities from across northwestern Ontario. The news agency reports there have been a number of teens that have gone missing in the city, but coverage of the missing youth doesn't make it outside the region. It's hoped that the coverage from CBC's Fifth Estate will reach across the country and look into issues faced by First Nations youth in that city. The federal court has ordered the federal government to hand over documents on subsidy decisions for non-Aboriginal lending institutions. Trabawiche Waywin Capital Corporation, a Winnipeg-based Aboriginal lending institution, has taken the federal government to court over the issue. TWCC is seeking a judicial review of the loan guarantee program announced by Indian and Northern Affairs in 2008. The Loan Loss Reserve Program Initiative set aside $15.5 million for loan guarantees, but TWCC says all 58 Aboriginal financial institutions in the country were deemed not eligible for that program. TWCC CEO Alan Park says they're now another step closer to getting resolution of a badly designed program. A concerned citizens group has been vocal about its opposition to a fracking project in northeast Nova Scotia. The project has been proposed by Petro Worth, which has acquired the rights to about 400,000 acres of land in Cape Breton. Virginia Marshall is a concerned Mi'kmaq citizen from Chapel Island First Nation, and she's worried about the environment.
We can't continue to keep ruining all these habitats for the fish and ruining the way the earth works for money, a piece of paper. A piece of paper is going to keep buying you this money, this food, and this water. This piece of paper cannot invent it. How is that going to help you when the time comes? We need to look out for our next seven generations. That is our Mi'kmaq way.
Fracking uses large volumes of water and a mix of chemicals that are forced under pressure down a well to break rock, and then gas is freed, followed by a watery mixture that comes to the surface. The National Association of Friendship Centres was disappointed with the federal budget, which came down last week. Vera Paywis is the president of the association, and she says it's been 15 years since there has been an increase in the Aboriginal Friendship Centre program. She says the budget overlooked the issue completely, and Paywis points out that the 117 friendship centres in the country provides service for 54% of the Aboriginal population in Canada. Anishinaabeg leaders in the Robinson-Huron Treaty area have been working towards implementing inter-treaty harvesting rights. Leaders recently met with the Ontario Ministry of Natural Resources. The leaders say court rulings back their position and that the Ministry of Natural Resources must recognize Anishinaabeg jurisdiction. Lake Huron Regional Grand Chief Isidore Day says the area leaders will soon consult Anishinaabeg citizens to decide on an approach to upholding inter-treaty harvesting rights. And in Nunavut, elders have been contributing to the Siku Ice Atlas. The Siku Atlas is a new online resource which documents traditional Inuit knowledge of sea ice. Nunavut elders want to be sure that young people have some knowledge about the ice because they don't use it as much as their forebears did. The elders want to also ensure that young hunters have the survival and navigational skills needed if their snowmobiles break down or GPS is down. The Siku Atlas project was launched earlier in March in three Nunavut communities and at Ottawa's Carleton University. And that's your National Aboriginal News.
We've had lots of time now to make up our minds now. 'Cause change is coming around the bend. No time for indecision. We've got to kill this division. A change will bring about the end. Now it's time to get out and get in. Let's get proud of your skin and sing. Hey, hey. Come get your freedom, get back into the rhythm.
That was Ceremony, winner of this year's Aboriginal Recording of the Year Juno Award, and that song was Looks Like Change to Me. Virginia Marshall is a very concerned Mi'kmaq citizen in Chapel Island First Nation. She's worried about the health of water in Petroworth's fracking project.
My concerns on fracking and all any other kind of oil and gas production has really began to destroy our earth, where like the equation for their solution is going to be the water. And with the water, they need to use it. In water is not invented. You cannot invent water. Water is natural and only comes from the earth. But if we continue to keep killing off our earth in the ways that we do, we are going to suffer. We are going to be without water. Blue gold, if you Google it, is going to be our next fight. That will be our next dollar sentimental value. And we need to realize now that the money is not as important as survival.
Okay, and Jenny, why don't you tell me about your opposition to Petroworth's fracking project?
The opposition towards, like, fracking is where they want to pressurize and they want to move the earth. They want to shift it so that it will come in. But, like, fracking just started happening in Quebec, and that was where they were already had so much of the project going. And just recently, within a few weeks ago, they were faced with a 4 to 5 in that range Richter scale earthquake. And of course, back to basic science, you know, that's what happens. You move the earth, you have an earthquake, right? And we are on a major fault line here, as the elders say, and we cannot risk that for their greed, for their money. No, like, we have to think about our kids. My children, I do not want them to grow up and have to fight for their survival. Of course, if we lose our water, the animals, you know, eat off the water. Our fish eat off the water, live in the water, you know, and we can't continue to keep ruining all these habitats for the fish and ruining the way the earth works for money. A piece of paper is going to keep buying you this money, this food and this water. This piece of paper cannot invent it. How is that going to help you when the time comes? We need to look out for our next 7 generations. That is our Mi'kmaq way. We have to, you know, all Mi'kmaq that feel that Mi'kmaq No, you know, we are part of the earth. We are the land protectors. We have to save our next 7 generations, and that is saving the most important things of it.
And Jenny, how do you feel like you've made any headway with your opposition, your group's opposition to this project?
I think to a lot of people that are already involved in these types of passions, we've all had to think of the hardships of, you know, how people think that we're crazy in some way, but to all realize that, no, you know, this is the truth, and we're trying to make everybody see the truth, but everybody's so blinded by the money and economic development that we decide to brush the truth away, you know. And but my children's future is, and our children's future, everybody that's in this, you know, mothers especially, that, you know, are that fear for their well-being. Like, you know, everybody's only thinking about the well-being. You can't put a blame on anybody for this, right? Because their well-being is what they're considering. That's the major consideration, is the well-being of the children and stuff. But we don't realize that we have to, like, stop killing off the earth, and that is the well-being of our children. At continuing to have their well-being by their water and their food.
What actions have you taken so far in your opposition to the project, and what's your next step?
My right now, I am focused more on what is going on with the project and people, making people aware of what is going on and what we're faced with and what we should be doing. And like, we want to do a walk for the water, and we want the kids to pray for the water, because the kids' prayer is the innocence. And so we want them to sing, and which down around so far we have Lake Ainslie and Chapel Island to do it, and we're going to hopefully have a major impact on why we need our water and why the kids, you know, are connected. You know, we need to save the kids. We need for them to have water. We can't be selfish about only us and today and our entertainment for right now. We need to think about what our kids are going to go through.
That was Virginia Marshall from Chapel Island First Nation in northeast Nova Scotia. Well, I'm glad you stuck around. The thought of hearing about the federal election seems to send many running. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about now. The politicians are out in full force spewing party rhetoric, and not much is coming out of their mouths as far as Aboriginal issues go. And I spoke with Peter Russell, a retired political sciences professor from the University of Toronto. And he doesn't think there's much out there. Plus, he has recommendations of his own.
Well, no, I may have missed something, Jennifer, but I haven't seen very much. You know, unfortunately for the Aboriginal people, their populations are spread out across the country. In some of the northern ridings, there are significant numbers, but in the more southern ridings, they're just a very small part of the electorate.
And I know some of the communities have been out there wanting water issues addressed. And I know that there was a private member's bill from Kelly Block that put forth the Transparency Act. And that's something else that they're not happy about. But I know that First Nations are looking to have water issues addressed, education addressed, and Aboriginal women issues.
Well, I certainly think that water question, we've seen a lot about that on television in Canada, as well as on radio and in the press, and it's a pressing problem for so many First Nation communities whose water is virtually undrinkable. And it seems to me utterly unacceptable to Canadians, all Canadians, not just the Native people themselves.
So what are some of the other issues you think that politicians should be addressing?
Well, I think there's a need for them to be more supportive of those Aboriginal nations, the First Nations, let's call them Aboriginal, First Nations, who want to move ahead with agreements on self-government and on land issues. I think the desire of governments, federal governments particularly, Liberal and Conservative, to extinguish Aboriginal land rights as a condition of making agreements with them is unacceptable in Canada. And I know it is to Aboriginal peoples, their leaders, and their communities. They don't want to secure their interests on their traditional lands and their rights to self-government in exchange for having their rights extinguished, their old rights, their fundamental rights, their rights as Aboriginal people extinguished. They want to express their Aboriginal rights in modern agreements and legislation. So I know that sounds like a professor talking, but it's just fundamental in the parts of Canada that I have been in where Aboriginal people are reluctant to go forward with agreements so long as governments are insisting on extinguishment.
And I know the other thing I've also heard a lot when you're talking about modern agreements, I hear a lot of First Nations say, well, how about you live up to your side of the treaties we've had in place for more than 100 years?
Yeah, and what related to that is also that in living up to them, they live up to the shared understanding of what those treaties were all about, not a written text that was not translated either orally or in any other way into languages spoken by the Aboriginal people. And to insist on the words in an English text, the Supreme Court has said, is wrong, and that's important. And the government, many government negotiators, still cling to the written text. There's movement there, but I think it's crucial to really make that a fundamental issue in the election. it's really getting back to the agreements on which this country in many ways was built and living up to them.
Is there anything else you'd like to say or add?
Well, in Ontario, Jennifer, I think there's a particular point of pushing for the federal government to cooperate in implementing the IPRWASH recommendations for a treaty commission. Ontario government is in favor, but we really want to get that treaty commission up and going. It doesn't negotiate treaties, but it's like a treaty ombudsman that makes sure that action on treaties, which is fair and in good faith, goes on. And we should press federal candidates on that matter.
Yeah, and that's something that's actually been on the back burner for quite a while now, and it seems like it's losing steam.
Well, and the Aboriginal peoples in Ontario and the Ontario government can't really get going with it until the feds come to the table.
That was Peter Russell, a retired political science professor from the University of Toronto. And Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madob, he says the message from the political territorial organization is to urge Anishinaabeg citizens to vote and press candidates for answers.
Well, first of all, I guess we've been discussing the election, and I think we're going to ask our leadership to really challenge their individual members of Parliament and from all parties to, come clean on, what is their positions on a number of issues. I think probably health and education are right up there in terms of key issues that impact on our communities. And then, of course, the bigger ongoing issues of treaty implementation and jurisdiction always come into play. But I think, if you were to ask me, what are some of the real pressing things that our communities are grappling with, there's always difficulty with, medical transportation issues, health benefit issues, cancer care initiatives. So a lot of health-related things we're hearing a lot on that. And then, of course, with education, we've got, a lack of proper resourcing to make sure that we get our students out for post-secondary institution. We have a real gap and discrepancy between the funding for First Nations schools and off-reserve schools paying for tuitions and curriculum and that thing. And then we have special needs in education. So there's a number of fronts in the education field that are high priority issues that continue to be issues that haven't gotten any answers, from any level of government for a number of years, and with the 2% cap, on funding, it makes it even more difficult to, with our growing demands for, these health and education needs.
Okay, and it sounds like that's a lot of really on the ground things. And what about what are your thoughts on water issues and water quality issues?
Well, obviously, we can't live without water, and our Waters Woman Commission and the women of our nation, who are the caretakers of water, have really brought this to the forefront with our leadership, how important water is. So we've got major concerns, and we're dealing with those types of things in terms of, sitting at tables at the International Joint Commission, discussing what happens with the Great Lakes. This discussion that's going on about the transportation of nuclear steam generators on our on Lake Huron and down the St. Clair water system and up the St. Lawrence causes us grave concern, and we've been meeting to discuss strategies to oppose that shipment of that very dangerous material. So pollution always is a concern with industry and environmental protection as a whole, but there's no question we've got to protect our water.
All right, and is the Anishinaabeg Nation producing any tools to help Anishinaabeg Nation citizens speak to their candidates in the ridings?
Well, we're going to be putting out, some information. In fact, I had a meeting this morning on that very issue, and I talked to my leadership council on Monday on it. And, yes, we will be producing some information that we're going to send out to our communities to, take a good look at the issues and the challenge, the various parties about, their priorities and their issues and also to, make them accountable, for the fact that, some of these real controversial things that have been done, you know, to try to erode our rights. I think, you know, we got to take them to task on that.
That was Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi. Now here's PI Boys from Australia. The song is called Aboriginal Justice and was produced to remember Aboriginal man Mulrunji Dumaji, who died in police custody 7 years ago, and his liver at that time had been cleaved in almost two, but charges have never been laid.
Let's go.
Well, it's the P.I. boys from Palm Island, kicking back with another track like a booming siren. The court's still lying, my people still dying.
Get your heads up, brother, P.I. boys are right.
Well, the P.I. boys from Palm Island, kicking back with another track like a booming siren. The court's still lying, my people still dying.
Get your heads up, brother, P.I. boys are right. Right, brother Murray, and I'm taking it back to the days when they even heard a rap. Think back to the time of the Great Kidnap, cause it's the next level. Let me ready to react.
Yo, back in the day, this was paradise. We were living off rations like a bag of rice. We never got paid, but we paid the price. My culture faded away day to night, but we stayed alive and we're still right here. With the Boogerman tribe, it's the end of your career. No fear, because we're ready to drop. It's the boys from Palm Island with the head of hip hop.
Listen up, everybody, they call the patch. You be ripping up a CD, and I'm letting the scratch. It's true what they see here, the boys are back. Get up off the chair and get ready to clap.
Boys from Palm Island, kick it back with another track like a booming siren. The court's still lying, my people still dying.
Get your heads up, brother, P.I. boys are right.
Well, it's the P.I. boys from Palm Island, kicking back with another track like a booming siren. The court's still lying, my people still dying. Yeah, boys are arriving. Cause the pub goes down and smuggle the grub, and it's alcohol that troubles the mob. Rolling on the streets so they get a cops. Who else is gonna rap if we decide to stop?
Straight to the top, now nothing has changed. From Dr. Point all the way back to Goose Lane. Since my great-grandfather was brought here in chain. Yeah, I'm writing this rap so you remember his name.
This is for my brother that was taken away from his family, I wish he was alive today. We're looking for justice Aboriginal way. Not just locking up my mouth for starting a fray.
Yes, yeah, starts today. No more of this. Listen to the rap scratched on this list.
A tale of paradise and the way we live. Look at the past and the present. Look at all of this.
This is for my brother that was taken away from family. I wish he was alive today. We're looking for justice Aboriginal way. Not just locking my mouth for starting a fray.
Yes, yeah, starts today. No more of this. Listen to the rap scratch on this list.
A tale of paradise and the way we live. We got the past and the present. Look at all of this.
Well, it's the P.I. boys from Palm Island, kicking back with another track like a booming siren. The court's still lying, my people still dying.
Get your heads up, brother, P.I. boys are right.
Well, it's the P.I. boys from Palm Island, kicking back with another track like a booming siren. The court's still lying, my people still dying.
Get your heads up, brother, P.I. boys are right.
There's a grassroots movement online called Closing the Gap 2011, and Bob Goulet is the man behind that movement. He's hoping to raise awareness about First Nations poverty and bring political attention to the issue.
Closing the Gap is a grassroots campaign with the goal of raising the awareness of First Nations poverty in the federal election. So many parties are moving forward with, the need to look at the economy, the need to look at those kind of fiscal measures, but no one is really looking at the need to rid Canada's biggest social issue, which I think is First Nations poverty. So hoping that this message will resonate to all the incumbent members of Parliament, all the candidates and political parties, and really start raising an awareness of the need to address First Nations poverty and, close the gap, this tremendous socioeconomic gap that exists between First Nations and the rest of all other Canadians.
And what do you think politicians are not paying attention?
I think politicians are, really focused on the economy right now as a whole. They're looking at, the different economic issues. They're looking at the budget deficit. They're looking at, the recession that's going on. But they're not paying particular attention to the need to address specific fiscal issues, with families. And, the stats are pretty clear. One in four First Nation children live in poverty compared to one in six non-Aboriginal children. know there's a need to address First Nations child poverty. You know, the rates of poverty for Aboriginal women are, you know, double that of non-Aboriginal women. We need to address those a bit more specifically. And really, with all the issue of, you know, the global recession and our economic challenges on a larger level and on a global level, you know, we keep on missing, and I really think that there needs to be more of an awareness of some of the more grassroots problems, and that's really what we want to see as part of the election and raising it as an election issue.
Okay, and looking at the other facts on the Closing the Gap website, I see that you have another statistic there that indicates that First Nations get less the amount per capita than other Canadians. You want to explain that a bit?
That's a big issue. You know, for a number of years, almost 15 years now, the support to First Nations and First Nation governments have been capped by the Ministry of Indian and Northern Affairs Canada, while inflation has been growing at levels of that require a growth of about 6.2%. So really, right from the start, we're looking at education programs and community health programs and employment programs. You know, First Nations are now behind the eight ball when it comes to just funding support. But, you know, there's this contemporary stereotype that, you know, billions and billions of dollars are being devoted to First Nations. But the reality is per capita spending on First Nations is really half the amount that is spent on average Canadians. And if you look at some of the numbers that's been put out by the AFN, you're looking at, about $9,000 that's spent on the average First Nation person compared to, $18,000 spent on the average Canadian. So, there's quite a bit of, gap in people's understandings, and all of it has to do with a lot of contemporary stereotypes that, there's these billions of dollars getting to First Nation reserves, and it's just not accurate.
And also on your campaign, on this website, you have a section there for how people can help and help spread the word and even speak with their MPs. And how does that work?
What we really want to do is ensure that First Nations take part in the election. It's something that I've been, advocating for a long time. Not only just going up to vote, but raising your particular issue, raising what's important to you, and just going out and talking to the candidates. When I first started getting involved in politics, that was one thing that I really realized that can be done right away is, politicians like to talk, and if you get a few minutes with, your local candidate and let them know what's important to you, then, they're more inclined to know who you are and they're more inclined to listen. I've been able to extend that and been able to, help out on the candidate and the political party that I believe in. And even there, they encourage you to get more involved, and you're actually able to move a lot of issues just by talking to people and getting to know people, getting to know the candidates. They become elected, they become members of Parliament, then you have a connection at Parliament Hill. And, a lot of First Nations people, a lot of grassroots people, have strong opinions and have strong values when it comes to some issues. There's ways to make change and affect change by, taking that step. We're really encouraging, all the people, all grassroots people to download a form letter and send that letter off to their candidate or send their letter off to their incumbent MPs. We're developing postcards that will be sent out to all First Nations and all friendship centers across Canada. And we want people to come in and fill those postcards out and send them and raise the issue of poverty in First Nation communities during the election. So we're really encouraging people to go to closingthegap2011.ca and picking up the letters that are on there. There's even a questionnaire on there. Send your questionnaire to your candidate. Have them answer those questions, on how to address these issues. Ask them their awareness of these issues. A lot of candidates find don't even know the stats, don't even know the issue. You're their conduit to more awareness and hopefully possibly affecting some sort of action, some sort of change.
That was Bob Goulet, and Goulet says Closing the Gap 2011 also has an active social media presence on Facebook and Twitter. That's Closing the Gap 2011. Now here's Rez Sister from Ossining.
I'm a Rez Sister. That's who I am. Even though I'm living in the heart of downtown, I'm a res sister, and I'm doing all right. Never, 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 never gonna give up the fight. 'Cause I'm a red sister, that's a who I am. Even though I'm living in the heart of downtown, I'm a red sister and I'm doing all right. Never gonna give up the fight. Working hard I'm for this hard. Lousy pay, yeah. Just to make sure my sure kids are okay. Yeah. I love my man with all of my heart. Shout it out loud, a red sister, of that I am proud. 'Cause I'm a red sister working for community, and someday we are gonna be free.
Holding hands and a healing heart, my cook-um says that's where community starts. Feel it in your bones, smell it in the air. If you can't get you can feel it there, 'cause you're a
red sister, yeah, a shooting star. A red sister, and you're gonna go far, 'cause you're a red sister, and you're doing alright. Never gonna give up the fight. That's a who I am. Even though I'm living in the heart of downtown, I'm a red sister and I'm doing alright. Never gonna give up the fight. 'Cause I'm a red sister, that's a who I am. Even though I'm living in the heart of downtown, I'm a red sister and I'm doing alright.
Annie Mae Pictou-Aquash would be 66 years old. Her birthday was March 27th. Annie Mae was a beautiful Mi'kmaq woman and mother of two girls. She was also a sister and a daughter. And she was shot execution style in December 1975 in South Dakota. And it has been until the past couple of years that two men have been convicted in her death. And the Nova Scotia Lieutenant Governor's Office commissioned different lecture series. And one is from filmmaker Kathy Martin, who's part of that circuit. She highlights Annie Mae in her talk about strong Mi'kmaq woman.
I was invited to do a lecture on whatever I wanted, and one of my favorite subjects is strong Mi'kmaq women in our history, and the women that I've known or I'm related to who've inspired me because of the stories and because of the lives they've led. So tonight I get to talk about some of them and honor them by telling some of the stories over time. Some of them are my own relatives, my great-grandmothers, who were women trappers and hunters, and I'm going to be talking about, you know, the legacy and the life they had to lead, and with all of the injustices that they had to experience over time due to, you know, colonization and other things. So I'm going to get to talk a little bit about some of those women. There's many of them. And I'll bring it to the modern-day women that I've known. And one of them who has inspired me, I didn't know her personally, but I've gotten to know her through her family, is Annie Mae Aquash. Annie Mae Pictou-Aquash, who was a member of the Mi'kmaq community and was from Shubenacadie, Nova Scotia. She joined the American Indian Movement and was murdered in 1975, and it took 35 years for her daughters and her sisters to find justice for Annie Mae and to find the truth about who killed her. So in December, we attended the final trial of John Graham. Two men have been convicted and sentenced to life in prison for the murder, two Aboriginal men, and they were members of the American Indian Movement. So I'm going to talk about Annie Mae and focus on her as more than anything tonight. Her birthday is March 27th, and it's Women's History Month. And so I thought it was an appropriate time to remember her and especially remember the struggle that her sisters and her daughters have had over 35 years to tell her story and bring her justice. And that's what we're talking about tonight, and what that has to do with other issues that we're facing as women today. Some of the women, other than Annie Mae, that are close to home here, like Nora Bernard, who led the largest class action suit in the country for the residential school survivors, was a member of my band, and she was violently murdered a few years ago. Another young woman from my own reserve, Millbrook, Tanya Brooks, was murdered within the last year and a half. And Tanya's case has yet to be solved. So she becomes a member of the unfortunate group of missing women in this country, murdered and missing women. She's not missing. I wanted to sort of bring the talk to what we can do today and to honor people like Annie Mae, like Nora Bernard, who have given their lives for a reason. I mean, they fought for justice. They saw injustices and they worked with to change that, and unfortunately met some of them had to give their lives for that. So tonight, that's what I get to talk about. How's that?
That's fantastic. I wish I could be there. Yeah. And when you were talking about some of the violent ends that women have come to, and then you said we'll talk about what we can do today, and what can we do today?
Well, I've been very much part of the Sisters in Spirit campaign and struggle, and have participated since the campaign came to fruition, when the government provided funding to Native Women of Canada to raise awareness about the 500 plus missing women and murdered and missing women in this country, Aboriginal women. Unfortunately, this past year we received word that the funding would be cut from this program, and I don't think 5 years is enough time to support the work of people who are trying to bring the voices of those murdered and missing women and their families to a place where we can understand more about why is it that 500 more Aboriginal women are murdered or missing in this country. Why did it take 35 years to bring what to most of us now know, a story about Annie Mae, what many people knew when she was murdered, that she was murdered by members of the American Indian Movement, and it was a secret that everybody knew, but nobody wanted to bring it to the family. Why is Tanya Brooks' case unsolved? Why is it that our young girl, Hillary Bennett, from Big Cove last year, why did it take so long for her as an Aboriginal young teenager to be found after she was kidnapped and raped and murdered? I think we need to find out why that is so that we can change that and maybe help save lives and women. And I think that the stories have to be told, and I think the Sisters in Spirit campaign, which is to raise awareness about Aboriginal women and the plight and the problems they encounter, and the problems that the families encounter when they're trying to find answers to their missing family members, we have to find that out. And I think Annie Mae has inspired many people to, obviously we don't want to give our lives up for this, but to, you know, to be a voice, to speak out, and not to accept what we've seen as injustices to women and Aboriginal people in the country. So I think we need to take a look at this Sisters in Spirit campaign. That's not the answer. It's just one of the things that was helping to bring awareness.
That was Mi'kmaq filmmaker Kathy Martin. You've been listening to Bomb Siddaw with Jennifer Ashwasige. Bomb Siddaw is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment, and a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bomb Siddaw means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bombsiddaw.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bomb Siddaw.